The date is April 10th, 1998, and we're watching City of Angels. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Seth to my Nathaniel Messenger.
Hello, everybody. This is Colin Stewart.
So, we are here in Meguary. Everyone loves Meg, and we are looking back at April 1998, when the movies and theaters were Wild Things, Lost in Space, Matt LeBlanc classic right there, Primary Colors, The Man in the Iron Mask. I'm going to throw a bonus at you, because it's early in 1998. Titanic, of course, was also still in theaters from December 97. And, of course, our movie for today, City of Angels, which earned $198.685 million on a $55 million budget.
That is flabbergasting. That is a substantial amount of money.
It's pretty good.
That's a success, yeah. I think.
This is when Nick Cage was super bankable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, as always, there will be spoilers ahead, so don't... We don't want to fall from grace.
There we go.
So if you don't want this movie spoiled for you, then please hit pause, go watch it, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
So I found two taglines for the poster this week. First one, what if angels walked among us and one of them fell in love with us?
That's a little on the nose, if you ask me. Like, that's not a tagline. That. We don't even need a 60-second synopsis. There you have.
Yeah, there, right there, yeah. Well, number two, she didn't believe in angels until she fell in love with one.
I like that one, I guess.
Yeah.
That's a fine one.
Yeah.
The first one sounds more like the pitch.
Yeah.
Like, not a lot.
Hey, guys. Hey, guys. Like... What if angels... Yeah. They walked among us, right? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's like your elevator pitch.
Yeah. Well, it's still not a very good description, so let's go to Colin and get a 60-second synopsis.
Los Angeles, the literal city of angels, where Seth and his buddies hang out in the libraries of L.A. and stalk humanity, which is what happens. Never mind. Seth is one of many in a literal city of angels who watch over humans, protecting them in unseen ways and guiding them to the next life. He is curious but struggles to understand human beings and their ways as angels lack human senses. While waiting to escort a man undergoing heart surgery to the other world, Seth is impressed by the vigorous efforts of the surgeon Maggie Rice to save the ill-fated man's life, and her sincere anguish at her failure to do so. Seth soon becomes focused on Maggie and becomes visible to her. They develop a connection which soon turns to a mutual attraction, although Maggie has a boyfriend. Seth then meets Nathaniel Messenger, one of Maggie's patients, who senses Seth's presence. He tells him that he, too, had once been an angel, but his free will is granted equally to mortals and angels. He decided to become human by falling. Seth begins to consider being with Maggie, and she learns that he is an angel. After Maggie tells Seth she's going to marry her human boyfriend, Seth takes a leap off a skyscraper and becomes human so that he can go to her and profess his love before it's too late. He heads to the hospital to see her, but is told that she has gone to her uncle's mountain cabin at Lake Tahoe. Penniless and naive, he cannot pay for the journey and gets mugged. He eventually hitches a ride to Lake Tahoe and appears soaked and cold on Maggie's doorstep. She realizes he has become mortal for her love, and they have sex. The next morning, as Seth is showering, Maggie rides her bicycle to a local store, and on her way back, happy and fulfilled, she rides her bicycle with her eyes closed, ill-advised, and her arms wide open. Her happiness is cut short when she fails to notice a logging truck crossing her path and runs into it. Sensing that Maggie's in trouble, Seth runs to her and finds her arriving just in time for her to die.
Yep.
The end.
There it is. City of Angels. Now, you were absolutely flabbergasted by the staggering amount of money that this movie made. I will say that back when this movie came out, I loved it. I thought it was a great movie, and I'm realizing all these years later that I think I was suffering from what I like to call Titanic fatigue. That's part of the reason why I wanted to bring up that Titanic was still in theaters, because I know by this point I had probably seen Titanic in theaters for the fourth or fifth time, maybe even more, because I had a girlfriend at the time that was obsessed with the movie. And finally, City of Angels comes out, and it's like, hey, what a nice romantic movie this is, and it's not Titanic. Let's go see this one. So I'm realizing that I was just kind of in a shell-shocked state at the time, where anything was better than seeing Titanic for yet another time. So
yeah.
But
yeah, I remember people were obsessed with Titanic.
Yeah.
When this movie came out.
Yeah. So when this movie first came out, though, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a nice movie. I thought it was a good, sweet, romantic movie. And I can't wait for this discussion, because 25 years has definitely clouded things. Colin, what is your experience with City of Angels? I don't think this will take long.
Yeah, I'd never... Like, I'm sure I had heard of this movie, but, like, it's nothing that I ever remembered.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not now, but I was never a big Nick Cage fan.
Yeah.
And so I didn't really, like, follow his, and I mean, when this movie came out, I would have been, like, 10? Yeah. I was born in 86.
12.
No, I would have been 12.
Yeah.
So yeah, this movie would have been not been on my radar.
Yeah, definitely.
I will say that this movie in tagline and name very much sounds to me like the type of movie that you would hear about on a TV show, like Prognosis Negative or something on Seinfeld. Like, it could be one of those where it's just like it's just a really like generic title and a really just straightforward tagline.
No, but it's got it's like an ogre. It's got layers, you know. It's got to peel back the layers of that ogre and find out that, wait, no, there's a double meaning going on with this title. Like you observed in your 60-second synopsis, they're literally in the City of Angels. That's deep, man. It's fucking deep.
Yeah, it is strange, the more I thought about it afterwards, that, like, do angels live anywhere else, or is Los Angeles, and it seems like Los Angeles is almost named the City of Angels because that's where the angels live. Like, they just love to go walk on the beach and listen to the sun in the morning. Like, I wonder, like, I would have been more interested if this movie was set, like, somewhere in the Midwest or, like, like, I don't know, somewhere in the, like,
what do cornfield angels look like? No, that's Field of Dreams.
Like,
that movie's been made. Yeah, they play baseball. Yeah.
All right.
Well, here we go. Let's jump into City of Angels, because I can't wait here. Directed by Brad Silberling, who directed one of your favorite childhood movies there. He was the director of Casper. So I guess he likes otherworldly, you know, reveal yourself at some point in the movie.
Why didn't Seth say to Maggie, like, can I keep you? At the end?
God, we have to watch Casper because of the amount of times that we have quoted, "Can I keep you?" Oh boy. Produced by Charles Roven and Don Steele. You know, interesting, we are now in Meguary, but we've got another posthumously released movie, because this one, it does say in the credits for Don, the other producer on this movie is Don Steele, and that's who the for Don is for. She died of a brain tumor 4 months before this movie was released. And this movie is written by Wim Wenders, Peter Henke, and Richard Reitinger, who all get the credit for being the writers on a movie called Der Himmel über Berlin, which...
That sounds like it could be racist, but I don't know.
Yeah, it's actually Wings of Desire, but the direct translation, because I was curious, this movie is called Wings of Desire, but I'm like, but I don't think Der Himmel über Berlin translates into that. It actually translates into The Sky Above Berlin, according to Google Translate. But yeah, a German movie that is basically the same movie as City of Angels. And also, Dana Stevens is the writer. I guess she's the one that Americanized it. And so nice. We open this movie on a mother panicking because her child is running a very heavy fever. And she's praying, and we get to see a theme that is shown throughout this movie. Nicolas Cage just kind of creepily being in the room. I mean, I know that it's supposed to be endearing, or, you know, there's this curiosity aspect, but he doesn't blink. And yeah. It's unnerving, and it's just, there's this quiet intensity to Nicolas Cage that, knowing that he's in my room, if I knew that he was sitting in my corner right now, I'd be a little terrified.
Yeah, because even his smile is the type of smile that's like, not because he feels anything, but it's like he just knows that it'll make you feel a little bit more comfortable.
Yeah, he's still dead behind the eyes. Like, it's just like Judge Reinhold with, you know, it's that same, like, just serial killery stare that he's got, just the dead eyes.
Yeah. Yeah, that opening scene, like, when I knew there was angels and stuff, I really thought that little girl was going to make it.
Yeah.
That was a...
You didn't think about the fact that he's there to take her across.
Well, because, like, I don't know if it's before, like, but it's also, like, they show him later, like, he does, like, just, like, go and comfort people as well and, like...
Yeah.
Like, help. And I don't know, but it is also weird to be like, is he a grim, like, are they grim reapers? Like, is that,
yeah,
like, is that his job?
Yeah, I do have trouble understanding what their job description is. Like, you know, they do seem to help. They're sort of guardian angels, but it just seems like they're annoyingly just watching. Like, it's just mm-hmm. creepily watching us do things.
Yeah.
Just, yeah, they don't seem to have an actual job, unless Grim Reapering is, like, is that their side hustle? Is, yeah, okay, I'll take the little girl away, because I want to ask her if she likes pajamas. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's an interesting choice for a favorite thing, too. Pajamas. Footy pajamas. I mean, I know she didn't have much life experience, but...
Yeah.
Pajamas?
I would have picked, like, birthday cake or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Dogs, puppies.
Puppies, ice cream. Yeah, anything. But, okay, so we've killed off a child already, but we haven't talked about this cast. Let's talk about this cast, because I don't think this one will take very long. There's really not a whole lot of people once you get down to it.
We got Nick Cage as Seth the Angel.
Seth Meg. Plate. Thank you very much. Yeah, yeah, Johnny Plate. Depp. Johnny Depp was wanted for that role. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep, of course. Yeah. Still a same weird intensity, maybe? In a different way?
Yeah. It's hard for me to, like, remember what Johnny Depp was like in the 90s. I'm so used to, like, current day. I can't imagine, like, current day Johnny Depp in that role, but I feel like 90s Johnny Depp probably could have done okay.
Yeah, because that would have been Edward Scissorhand age.
Yeah.
What's Eating Gilbert Grape age?
Yeah. We got Meg Ryan as Dr. Maggie Rice.
That's right. Miss Maggie Wary.
It must be nice when you get to play a character that's, like, close to your own name.
Yeah,
must
right?
make things a little easier. Yeah. Andre Brower is Cassiel, the angel friend.
Mm-hmm. Captain Holt,
recently departed.
Rest in peace. Yeah.
Colm Feore for Fiore is Jordan Ferris. That's the boyfriend, I believe.
Yeah, Dr. Jordan Ferris.
Dennis Franz Sipowicz plays Nathaniel Messenger.
Last scene for us in Die Hard 2. Die Harder, I think. That's right. The last time we saw him. This was actually his last movie before he retired.
Yeah, I Googled him because I was like, he must be dead. Like, I haven't seen this guy.
Yeah, no, he turns 80 this year.
Yeah, he's still alive.
Yeah, no, but he did this, and he finished out NYPD Blue, and then he retired. I guess he did a music video as well. He did a music video for the Dixie Chicks. Or, I guess, sorry, the Chicks, as they're referred to now, because they dropped Dixie. And so, yeah, it was their Goodbye Earl video, and he was Earl. So, you know, Dennis Franz playing the scumbag in that song.
Nice.
Yeah.
Robin Bartlett is playing Anne.
Yeah.
Joanna Merlin is Teresa Messenger. And then...
That's kind of it.
Yeah, there's one more on Wikipedia. Sarah Dompf is Susan. I don't remember who Susan is.
Yeah, neither do I. I do have a couple shout-outs, though. Because apparently Elizabeth Shue is in this movie. She's uncredited, but she's the pregnant woman. When Seth starts getting weird flashes and he sees a woman giving birth, that's Elizabeth Shue.
Hmm.
The man that's sitting in the bar smoking that Seth imitates is director Michael Mann. And Nick Offerman is a construction worker.
Wow.
Yeah.
Ron Swanson.
Ron Duke, Swanson.
Duke Silver himself.
Yeah, dude, that's right. Yeah. Traded in his saxophone for a hammer and a tool belt.
That's funny.
I mean, Nick Offerman being a construction worker, well, yeah, that's kind of Nick Offerman's wheelhouse right there, so.
Yeah.
So I want to say that I'm impressed with what they were able to do with this movie, just cinematically. Like, no matter what, the amount of, like, just sweeping shots over the city of all these people in trench coats just standing on things, you know, it was very impressive to watch. And there were some very interesting, subtle special effects going on in this movie. Like, when they go to see the sunset and they're walking through the sand and their footsteps are disappearing as they walk. And I thought, wow,
I didn't even
notice. Good job, 1998. It was very subtle, but it was very cool. It's like the shot when he's behind Meg Ryan and in the mirror and you don't see him in the reflection. Like, you know, just simple special effects, but the footprints in the sand really impressed me.
Yeah. It's like that old, like, home or whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah.
It took that to heart.
That's right. Yeah, you don't leave footprints in the sand. You can't. Not if you're an angel.
Do you, like, were, like, in the library and stuff, or in the, was there any computer, like, or special effects used to make all those angels? Or those, is every one of those angels an extra?
I think every one of those angels is an extra, yeah. I mean, it's interesting because I think this is the most diverse movie we've ever watched on this show, but only if you're an angel. If you have a speaking role, not so much. But boy, did they cast a fucking, you know, wide range of ethnicities. United Nations of angels. But I found it interesting that the ratio of men to women was like 50 to 1. There were only a few women angels.
One, a woman.
I think I saw three the entire movie.
Okay. I thought it was an interesting choice that they all wear black and
yeah,
not white.
That too.
Maybe white would have been a little bit too on the nose. But...
Quite possibly. But there is something striking about them all standing there in their trench coats on these rooftops and on these signs and everything like that.
I find the angel, like... The angel scene's most interesting in that, like, library, because it's just, like, because it's, like, a column or whatever, like, it's a circle.
Yeah, because, like, of the shape of it, yeah.
You can just see, like, how they're just always everywhere. no matter what. Like, when she's walking up the stairwell, it's like, you know, there'll just be angels, like, standing, like, way off in the distance and that kind of stuff. Just how, like, I don't know, that's, like, their clubhouse, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, ultimately, on this viewing, because it's been a while since I've seen it, and, like I said, Titanic fatigue, on this viewing, it's kind of like, okay, it's cheesy, and there's a creepiness to it. Like, what I used to think was romantic and oh my god, heart-melting 25 years ago, it's like, no, there's a creepiness to every interaction she has with Nicolas Cage in this movie.
Yeah, that's for sure, and it's not just because it's Nicolas Cage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Although that is part of it.
It helps. It's definitely a contributing factor.
I really like the scenes off the top where it's like Seth and Cassiel talking. I wish there would have been a little bit more of that throughout, because Cassiel kind of like just drops off in the like the middle section of the movie, and I thought he could have been used well to just like, I don't know, paint more of what Seth was going through and this like, or even with the other angels. Like, I wish we would have got to see the angel hangout at the bar or whatever, or on the beach, like where they're all just like talking about like humanity, I guess, and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, he only talks to the one buddy of his. Like, he doesn't really interact with any of the other angels. Mm-hmm. And I kind of get what you're saying there about it would be nice to have a bit more Nathaniel. I wonder if part of that is just because I love Brooklyn Nine-Nine so much that I wanted to see more Andre Brower in this movie, right? Yeah. Because, like, I'm sitting there watching him, and it's like, oh, you do not sound like Captain Holt in this movie. Like, it's you have a much higher voice in this movie. But, yeah, that the buddy stuff that was going on, like, in the liquor store when they prevent the robbery from escalating, like, even that like little buddy cop moment that they've got going on in a way is, yeah, that's a fun moment too. And you're right, it's disappointing that he disappears in the middle. I mean, I guess we gotta focus on the love interest of the movie if we're gonna make a love story, but romance.
I imagine too that they might not have wanted to get too much into like how the angels work, just because it's like you don't want to upset like religious America.
Keep it ambiguous, like, yeah,
yeah,
yeah. No, that's fair. That's absolutely fair. Yeah, I mean they already gendered God in this. That probably already had some people upset.
Yeah, how dare they?
Well. So let's meet our heroine of this movie, our subject of Maguire. Yeah, we see Meg Ryan biking to work because she's just a badass surgeon. She's spunky, that Meg Ryan.
Yeah, they call that foreshadowing.
Yeah,
they show her on the bike a lot, so that, you know, by the end you think that she's like some competent bike rider, and then.
Yeah.
They just rip the rug right out from under you.
She's a pro, yeah. She should know. Like, she might as well have been like a triathlete or something. And it's like, oh no, she knows how to ride. But she's also, I mean, like a lighthearted surgeon. And you know, she plays music in the ER because that's how cool she is.
I feel like I was watching something recently where there was like basically the exact opposite of her. Like, it was somebody who was like, no, we don't do music. Like, it's serious, blah, 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 whatever. But I can't remember what show that was.
Yeah. Actually, you know, strangely, I feel like I've seen that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was it Small Soldiers? Or was it a movie that we just watched recently?
I don't know. Yeah. But of course, you know, despite the light atmosphere that they have where they're throwing like the People magazine in the biohazard bag, because, you know, as a funny sight gag, her patient does die and we find out that she has a very callous bedside manner. And that's
Is that
the
where
thing.
They lose the sponge too?
Yeah, yeah. They temporarily lose the sponge. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I didn't really fault her like I don't know, how do you tell somebody that their family member died during something that was supposed to be like routine? I feel like that would be super tough.
Yeah.
I didn't really hold it against her.
I think you open with, I'm sorry.
I guess. I guess that would be a good start.
You know, like, you know, I'm sorry. I have some bad news for you. Yeah, your husband didn't make it. Yeah, like, it's just, yeah. Like, she just kind of came out with, like, he's no longer with us. Like,
he's no longer with us.
Or something like that. I don't know.
He decided to stop living.
Yeah, fucker's dead, man. Yeah.
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 She's just taking it hard. You get the sense that she doesn't really lose a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, because she's badass. We established that with her riding.
I guess.
Playing music, yeah. But no, she can't hold it together, and that's when we see, like, Nicolas Cage creepily watching her in the stairwell as she has a breakdown, trying to figure out what tears are or something. You know, like, Nicolas Cage, he's very good at that vacant look. In this movie, he's always got the, like, just this quizzical, like, I don't know how he lowers his IQ just with his look that much, but... Like, he really does have this innocence and naivety that's on his face, but then it's paired with the creepy Nicolas Cage not blinking. Like, that was a choice. Like, the angels are all intentionally trying not to blink. When he becomes human, he does blink a lot. But yeah,
when he becomes human, he becomes, like...
Manic.
Like Nick Cage.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, he turns that Nick Cage up to 11. He's out doing his thing.
Part of this movie that I didn't understand was the whole, like, she can see me thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because at one point he's talking to Cassiel, like, her seeing him is not within his control. But then it, like, goes from that scene almost to, like, he's back watching her in the operating room or whatever. And it was kind of like, he's there and she's looking at him, but in that moment she can't see him. Because if she could see him, she would have been like, what are you doing in the middle of my operating room? Or something like that. And I didn't understand, like, because I thought the way the movie was more...
You're not in,
like,
a gown. You're not, you don't have a mask on.
Yeah. When I read the premise of the movie, I thought it was going to be more like there was something, like, about her that allowed her to see angels or something, if you know what I mean. Uh-huh. Like, and so I didn't understand, like, if there was just something about, like, maybe the emotionality of that time that, like, it was like, and then he, because of, like, his experience, like, he just allows her to see him, or how that worked.
Well, see, I've always taken it as partly because she starts having this, like, existential crisis about what if, you know, everything's just faded no matter what you do, right? She starts thinking that way, so I think she becomes more susceptible to the belief of it. I just feel like he can reveal himself, but They can't be seen by people unless they choose to reveal themselves. So just in that one moment, though, when she's, like, doing chest compressions and she looks him right in the eyes, though, that's the moment that he feels like that he was seen even though he wasn't letting himself be seen. But the rest of the movie where he's showing himself, no, that's just him, like, being a creepy stalker that has nothing to do, I think, with her, like, okay, now I can see you.
Okay. Yeah. Because I mean, later on, like, you know, when he's like cuddling her in bed and she can't see him, that was probably the weirdest scene of the entire movie to me.
A little bit.
At first it seemed kind of like he was like, I don't know,
molesting her. Yeah, he's getting a bit more out of it than she was, but she slept through the whole night.
But then she had a great sleep, so I mean, I don't know what that says.
Yeah. No, it's just the happiness. He brought her inner peace.
Inner peace.
I don't know. Yeah. Is it weird that she hangs out in a nursery?
Well, wasn't there something like she, like, it sounded like kind of like she had thought about going into pediatrics or something at some point? Like that, those are the two career paths that she chose.
Yeah, I mean, I know her friends down there. It just, it seems like a weird place to hang out. But I guess it, if what? I were, I'd hang out with puppies if I worked at like a pet store or something, right? You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did think it was kind of weird that she has that scene at first, and then it was like nothing in this movie can just be left alone, like to be not paid off, because then after she has her good night's sleep, all of a sudden she like solves the mystery of this baby who apparently isn't sleeping.
Oh yeah, we've got Chekhov's bike, Chekhov's baby, Chekhov's, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, nothing can be left alone. I also have to say, though, with my experiences with like childbirth, like it's also weird to see a nursery. Like, at what point did they give up the nursery? Because nowadays it's like,
yeah, it's not that way.
5 minutes after you get birth, you that baby never is out of your sight at all. Nope, that baby's now yours.
Yeah, that's like a thing that I wonder when there, like, if, okay, I wonder two things. If nurseries even exist, I wonder that. If not, when did they stop?
They did at one point, like, for sure.
It seems to be a thing that's still perpetuated in movies. Like, I've only ever seen it in movies. I've never seen it in real life. Unless it was, like, an ICU or something. But, like something where you have, like, dire situations. But, yeah, not for just, like, newborn infants.
Yeah, when you have incubated babies.
Yeah.
When they just need to cook a little longer, those babies. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're thrown back in.
they
usually need a few more minutes. Yeah, but they're usually in a room where they're clustered together. But other than that, yeah, no, nope, that's your baby now. That's your problem. Not ours. See ya. Okay, so I got to go back to Seth revealing himself to Maggie. Because when he first reveals, it's in that dark hallway. And he's just so weird. Like, why does he give off some sort of energy? Why does she want to continue that conversation?
Yeah, like, it's a thing that, like, I don't think, like, plays anymore. Like, I think back in, like, whenever I watch movies like this, it reminds me, like, back when I was in junior high. And it's like, you literally thought, like, you could get a girl to like you by just like staring at her from like a distance. And I'm like, no wonder I never had a girlfriend. Like, because that's creepy.
Yeah, I was taught wrong. Yeah.
The media taught me wrong.
Oh, big time. Big time. Yeah. Yeah.
Like you thought, like, oh, if you could just stand back and just, like, catch her eye, and, like, that would be a good move. No.
Yeah. See, and another thing that I was having trouble understanding were just kind of the physics of some things. Because it seemed at first that they're setting up the angels to... They hang out in the library because that's where people are reading and they can listen to their thoughts. And I thought that was their way of reading and learning and stuff, was to be reading people's thoughts. That's what I thought the deal was, because they can't read themselves. Like, they can't pick up the books. But then we have the whole thing with the Ernest Hemingway book, where he somehow breaks into her apartment and leaves it for her on her nightstand. That's not creepy. That's not creepy at all. What are you talking about? But, so... He can pick up things. He can pick up the lettuce and cut it. So it seems like they wanted you to think that the only way that they can, I don't know, like,
yeah,
they move at the speed of thought is what they're, but, yeah.
But even with the lettuce, I don't know if this is true or not, but I'm remembering that scene. It almost seemed like he wasn't sure if he could do it or not. Like, he picks it up hesitantly, like, he's, like, and I mean, part of it's probably because he's never done it before, like, he doesn't have to eat or anything.
Yeah.
But it was kind of, like, or even when he, like, touches her for the first time, when they kiss or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, it seemed kind of like there was this idea, like, he didn't know for sure whether or not he'd be able to actually touch her. Like, corporeal.
Yeah. Yeah, and there is a bit of that sense that's true, but Yeah, as far as not knowing how to do it, I mean, you guys obviously creepily hang out in people's houses all the time. You've seen people cut lettuce.
Mm-hmm.
You can figure it out just from the context of what you've seen, you know? Like, it's not that hard to figure out.
Well, I'm still almost, like, cuts his finger off, but...
Yeah. Oh, another really cool, subtle special effect, him dragging the knife through his thumb, yeah.
Yeah, I wonder why they all hang out in the library if it's because, like, I was thinking maybe they do just go around, like, reading human history, trying to, like... But at the same time, I'm kind of like, you're angels. Wouldn't you have not been there for, like, the entirety of human history? Like,
wouldn't you have watched it happen? Yeah.
Yeah, like, so what do you need a library for? You've seen it all.
Yeah, like, the more interesting thing is the reading people's thoughts, because it's like, what's this crazy motherfucker thinking over here? It's...
Yeah.
So, the other person, of course, that is an important ingredient in all of this is Mr. Messenger, who we first meet sneaking some ice cream in his hospital bed.
Mm-hmm.
He's in there for his procedure. But what kind of ice cream?
Ben and Jerry's.
Well, I'll tell you about it in Sponsorship Corner! It was Ben and Jerry's, actually, yes. Always on the lookout for product placements and movies, this week's City of Angels is brought to you by Puma Shoes, Trek Bicycles, Pepsi Cola and Mountain Dew, Miller Lite Beer, Ben and Jerry's Ice Cream, Chapstick, Folgers Coffee, American Express Credit Card, Paramount Trailers, CB Commercial, Arco, Luxtech Medical Headlamps, that was one of my favorite catches, People Magazine, Polaroid Cameras, the LA Dodgers, Schneider Trucking, and the book A Movable Feast by Ernest Hemingway, plus the possibly fictional Blackjack Inn, High Hope's Wedding Chapel, and, quote, store. And I think an argument could be made for Band-Aid's brand bandages. Because I'm stuck on Band-Aid brand, because Band-Aid's stuck on me. And this has been Sponsorship Corner. Never actually see them use Band-Aids, but she sings it over and over again.
Yeah.
No, so when we meet Mr. Messenger, I have to say that this part of the movie, it goes from the scene with Dr. Jordan, where it's he removes the tick from the dog, and then she just wants him to be with her. First of all, I want to say that's a trap. Right? Because, you know, it's unnatural. You know, no matter what, no matter how much I love my partner, I can't stand there and stare at her for 5 minutes. It's just weird.
That always reminds me of that, like, 30, like, I think, and I've only ever seen, I'm pretty sure, the pilot episode of 30 Rock, but Alec Baldwin's character, like, comes in and he does this thing of, like, where it's like he gives people like 10 seconds of uninterrupted eye contact or whatever.
Yeah.
That's what that reminds me of. But I thought that if there was one part that I could excise from this movie, it would be the Maggie Jordan. Like, I just feel like she doesn't need to have a boyfriend. And their relationship is so weird. And I don't really even know what purpose it serves to the actual story that, like, You could just get rid of that.
Yeah, I think so, pretty much, yeah. But then it goes from this scene into one of the Mr. Messenger scenes. He's had his surgery. He's now sitting there, you know, watching TV, but he knows that Nick Cage is there. He's like, you want to watch anything? No. This was a real challenge for me to watch, because my DVD froze somewhere around the scene with the doctor and wouldn't pick up again until they were in the diner.
Okay.
And so my lovely fiance went and found me a slightly less legal copy online, and I was watching it just because I watched the rest of the movie. But I'm a completionist on this show. You know, I have to say, I'm dedicated to the show. I wanted to watch that 4 minutes that I had missed. So she found me a copy. I watch it. Just that 4 minutes, frozen the exact same fucking spot. Like, someone did not want me to watch this movie. Eventually, I managed to find this 4 seconds of film.
It was the real Seth.
But it was a nice scene. I'm glad I got to see it.
Yeah, I really liked Mr. Messenger. My only problem is that he ends up kind of replacing Cassiel. And I think that it would have been nice if there was more of like Seth goes to him, Seth goes to Cassiel. Like, where it's like
good angel, bad angel.
Yeah, where like he's getting like two different viewpoints, so that by the time he's going to make a decision, it's like a miss. Like, what's he gonna do?
Yeah,
because it kind of really wasn't for me. By the time he ultimately decides to do what he's like, I was just like, oh yeah, he's going for it.
Yeah,
but anyways, no, I still do really like Nathaniel Messenger, and I was, because I had never seen the movie before, I just knew like the premise. I was really wondering like how it was gonna be.
How he was going to fit in.
That Seth and Maggie, like, quote-unquote, end up together. Because I was was it going to be, like, a situation where she dies and becomes an angel? Because they mentioned at the beginning, like, humans always ask if they can become angels, and they tell them that they can't. And I thought maybe that was going to be the turn where, like, now she's going to get to become an angel, and they'll be, like, angel lovers forever or something like that.
Yeah.
But
apparently you don't get to become an angel.
No.
Unless you're willing to make paper wings, yeah. Yeah, I could see how you'd be wondering which way it's going to go. It is basically reverse Ghost, though. You know, it's...
yeah.
He goes most of the movie not being able to be with her, but at the end he can be. Yeah. Okay, so I have to assume, though, that the angels can't see color properly. That's why they hear music in the sunset. Because when he does fall and become human, one of the first thing he says is, color, in his crazy Nick Cage way. He's very excited about the color. And they do seem to purposely, like, bring in the noise a bit more and kind of punch up the color a little bit. Like that blood is very vivid on his hand. So it just makes me wonder, is that why they hear music in the sunset instead of being able to see it properly? Like, are they like dogs? Do they see in grayscale? Like,
maybe. That wouldn't be, I can't think of something that specifically points to that, but like I wouldn't. It definitely, like, seems to me that, like, the angels have, like, a blunted scent. Like, the whole thing is, like,
they can't touch.
They don't get to, like, experience the joys of being mortal. And I think that's part of it is, like, when you could be seeing something for the last time, everything is more vibrant or something, like, something to that effect when it comes to color and just smell and taste and, like, your senses and that kind of stuff. But then it is interesting that they do hear, like, sunlight.
Yeah. See, and I'm just thinking about your point also about Cassiel kind of disappearing once Nathan Messenger shows up, is when they go to the beach and he goes skinny dipping in the ocean, is Cassiel there for that scene? I don't think he is.
I don't think so.
Yeah, when Messenger convinces him to take him down to the beach. I mean, they have their little bro date day. That's a fun little bro day. Go skinny dipping.
Yeah.
Get some waffles and French toast.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know that I've... maybe I'm missing out on life. I don't know that I've ever done that with another man.
No, naked body surfing? Never done naked body surfing with another man?
No one would really go to do that in Edmonton, though. Like,
yeah.
Don't know if I'm about to go jump in the North Saskatchewan. And...
Yeah, that's true. True. Probably not. Yeah. The weird date that she goes on with Seth is also an interesting first date choice. Where he's just like, I just want to go anywhere. And they go to, like, the farmer's market. Like, they go shopping.
Mm-hmm.
And then she takes him to her lab. Like, what a weird fucking date. Or is she's like, well, if he's down to do this, then I guess this guy's cool. Is that, I don't know. I just, their whole vibe is just odd. Like,
well, like the one thing I don't get is that, like, he has a boyfriend.
Yeah.
So is she just like, surely she's attracted to him, and I'm pretty sure, but it's like, I feel like that whole aspect gets lost in this movie about, like, what her deal is with Jordan and and him. And it's, like, they're never really, like, it's never really, like, painted as, like, a Jordan versus Seth situation until, like, I think because she learns about, like, what he would have to give up, she kind of says that stuff about how she's just gonna go marry him and, like, blah, blah, like, but... Yeah, it is weird that they're going on all these dates. And I mean, like, she even mentions it to Jordan at one point. Like, she's going to see her. She got caught up talking to her friend or whatever. And, but yeah, that's a whole weird situation.
Yeah, that's where you're right, that it would have been kind of nice if there had been no Dr. Jordan and more of the focus had been on his turmoil between being pulled by this fallen angel and this other angel, you know, and more of that, of what will he do.
I was happy that this movie wasn't a complete, like, when he told me it was a drama, I thought it was just going to be like just very, very, you know, sappy. I mean, it is sappy, but it was nice, I guess, just that there was some like comedic aspects to it.
Yeah, the fish out of water situation of it is definitely interesting. One thing I missed about the mandate that he goes on with Messenger is that when they are out sitting on, like, the girder, they are actually out sitting on a girder high above the city. That one's not actually like any kind of special effects or anything.
And
both Nick Cage and Dennis Franz are terrified of heights, so good for them. Yeah,
that's awesome. Do you think if you were an angel, you could give it all up? I mean, to be honest, being an angel doesn't sound like, I mean, being immortal would be cool, but I don't know if being an immortal angel doesn't sound like it's all that much of a fun time.
No, it kind of sounds boring after a while. I mean, yeah, like I don't think you sleep. You know, like, so it's like you're up constantly. That drives people mad. I mean, it's like that's what Maggie figures out. The baby can't sleep. I mean, these angels never sleep.
Yeah.
I don't know. It does also go back to the question of, well, am I stuck in Los Angeles?
Yes.
Like, is that the only place I can live for the next, you know, ever?
Yeah, what if you're an angel in New York, and then you could just go watch Broadway all the time? Like,
yeah,
be so much more to do.
Exactly. Yeah, go hang out on movie sets, watch movies being made. But that would get boring after a while because the number of takes and everything. Not actually very interesting to watch a movie game filmed.
Yeah, I was gonna say maybe you could just like make yourself visible. Like, you could just try to be an extra, but.
Yeah.
Then we see in that one scene when he gets his picture taken, like, he's just a shining...
It's just a flash, yeah.
Shining
you'd
flash.
You'd ruin films all over. So, okay, you didn't know the movie, but you had to have known the soundtrack.
I didn't, no.
Really?
But I did like it.
Like, the Goo Goo Dolls song, that wasn't one that... And I'll give up forever. Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I knew the songs and like the
Arms of an Angel. Yeah.
Yeah, that one.
Which gets a whole montage. You know, she's depressed and listening to Sarah McLachlan. You know, and then
And then the Alanis song and
in the credits.
Is that for the credits?
You're uninvited. She also gets the world's worst proposal. Like, that's the other part that, like. They don't even make the doctor remotely likable.
No. I was watching Liar Liar today, and the proposal that this guy gives is very reminiscent of the proposal that that Carrie Elwes gives to the mom, mm-hmm. I can't remember her name right now, in Liar Liar, where it's just like, we're good together.
Yeah.
Like I like you, you like me, let's be together.
This one, he gives the speech about how they're the same kind of person, because whatever, it works with our schedules, basically, is what he's saying in his, yeah. I do like the moment when she goes and dumps his ass, though. It's like sending someone out, you know, sending Bigfoot off into the woods at the end of Harry and the Hendersons. You know, get out of here. I don't love you.
Yeah.
But, like, the moment of, like, all the angels coming to the balcony and watching, it's like, oh, awkward. Fuck.
Well, these angels need some boundaries.
There's a lot of angels hanging out in kids' rooms. I don't want to say anything bad, but it's just like, you should be hanging out with adults more.
Yeah, you don't see, like, I would have thought they'd spend more time in, like, nursing homes and, like,
yeah,
like with the elderly, but
I don't know.
I guess there's that one where they're in like a retirement home. That's where he finds the book at first.
Yeah. You could spend more time just watching people fuck.
That's not very angelic.
Not very angelic. Well, but, you know, ultimately he does fall and he does get to fuck, and then she dies. Like, how wonderful.
There's a gloss ago. You're just gonna gloss over it, like, that maybe one of the, like, the weirdest sex scenes I've ever seen in my entire life.
Oh, I'm not glossing over anything. I'm just setting the stage for the end of this movie that we need to discuss here, because he wakes up as a human. He's a bit of a lunatic, dancing down the street and everything like that. He gets his boots stolen. He gets jacked for his boots and somehow makes it to Tahoe. I still don't quite understand how he managed to pull off all the way to her. How long do you think he actually took to get there?
Los Angeles to Salon.
Okay, what is Reno to Tahoe? That's one question to ask. Because the truck driver said that he would take him to Reno, but did the guy end up feeling bad for him and taking him all the way to Tahoe? It's a 45 minutes from Tahoe.
Los Angeles to Lake Tahoe is a 7-hour and 16-minute drive.
Oh, yeah, he's coming from L.A., duh. What's L.A. to Reno?
So let's see if you... I'll add a stop in Reno here. Reno is past Lake Tahoe.
Oh, so, okay, so he was going that way. Okay.
Yeah.
He got him all the way there. Good. Because our man Seth got to get his dick wet, so, you know.
What a strange... This is the thing, I guess, about falling that would be... It's like, what's your plan?
Mm-hmm.
You fall, and then immediately you're just, like, broke, you know? All you have is, like, a black trench coat and black... Like, black clothes.
Yeah. You got your crow cosplay.
You have no job, no skills, no green card, no social security. Mm-hmm. Like, what's your play?
Yeah.
Like, I actually think Seth's plan was kind of brilliant, because Maggie, like, she's a surgeon. She's got to be loaded.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, like, he's probably not going to have to work. Like, say everything had worked out with them, he wouldn't have had to work.
Yeah.
But...
My thought is more, okay, you are giving up forever to touch you. I just wanted to quote some
food.
You want to give up this life, or you want to become mortal for a surgeon. Why not jump off the roof of the hospital right in front of her? So that she can save your life right then. Be like, whoa, shit, wait, Seth? Holy fuck, I'll save you right now instead of making you come all the way to Tahoe. Like, why don't you give her the heads up? You know, or is that not divine enough? Like, is that... Is that, like, you know... when you, if you say what your wishes are, when you blow out your candles, they don't come true, you know, is if you tell her you're going to fall, it doesn't happen. Like, does it have to be a selfless, no one knows situation?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Has me confused.
They don't really, they kind of just gloss over that part.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, he gets to Maggie's house. So you wanted to talk about this sex scene. So what's weird about this sex scene to you, Colin?
I just don't like the talk that is occurring, like the when she asks, she's like, how does that feel? And he's like, warm, and I'm just like, ew, gross. Like, not like, just like, I don't know.
It could have gotten worse. Like, yeah, like, there were many other adjectives.
What if he had said moist, slippery? Moist. Like, I don't know.
Yeah,
like,
slippery, yeah.
Yeah. But
like
the thing
warm
is
apple pie.
But the thing is I don't even think penetration has occurred there.
No.
Because
no.
then she's like, oh yeah, don't worry. It fits together. Like, it's made to fit together. And I'm like, oh God.
Yeah.
Like, this is too clinical for my, like, maybe that's how doctors have sex. I don't know.
Oh boy. I hope not. But I mean, maybe you have to when you're an angel. Okay. Yeah. No, you're right. That could have probably been done without, but whatever.
It's no pottery.
No, it definitely isn't. Yeah, I mean, like, there's so many ways you could have spoofed this scene, like, and now, oh, cold, you know, like, you could, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, it's, you gotta have a callback to the pair.
Yeah, I did like that. I like the callback to the pair.
Yeah.
I like the whole thing about him, like, seemingly taking, like, an hour-long shower, because, I mean, I feel like that's one thing, like, showers are the best.
Yeah.
And that shower looked like it was exquisite. I also like how he burns himself.
Mm-hmm.
And in a weird show, you like, the most nudity you get, I think, is almost seeing Nick Cage's penis.
Yeah. Except I did notice that he's wearing jockey shorts.
Yeah.
They really didn't do a good job of erasing it. Yeah. No, the shower, I mean, Messenger does say that you're going to wake up smelling worse than you've ever smelled and hungrier than you've ever been before, and you have no idea what any of it is. And so for you to even say, like, that, how nice that shower is, we all know that feeling. I mean, especially if it's one of those showers after you've been, like, sick in bed for 3 days or something like that, where, you know, this is the first time you've even been out of bed. That shower always feels good. Or the shower when it's like you've just had a really hot day. You know, those are the ones that feel really good. But so we all know the extra special long shower. So this is him smelly. He's had a long day. He's had a long trip. He got laid. Now he's got a shower. Yeah, this is the best shower you're ever going to have.
Yeah. And then, like, it seems like Maggie had the best sex she's ever had, because, like, she's reached, like, new levels of enlightenment that she's just, you know, ripping around, like,
such
her
a good mood.
Mountain roads, eyes closed, arms out. Like,
well, yeah, the pear. I mean, we have Chekhov's pear. It came back to bite us in the ass. We have to know, she forgot to get him a pair, so she had to go to the, quote, store, like I said in Sponsorship Corner. And, yeah, she comes around that bend, eyes closed, just like, oh, I don't know if you're a Sons of Anarchy watcher, but just like the last season of Sons of Anarchy. Yeah, and there we have a logging truck, and she can't hit the brakes fast enough. That seems like a lot of reaction that's going on. She hit the truck. The truck didn't hit her, right? That's the trajectory.
Yeah. Well, I assume she actually hit the log.
Yeah. And
like, I thought it was like a straight, like, and then also, like, with that, like, there's no way she's alive by the time, like there's no way she's instantly dead, in my opinion.
Yeah.
If she's just hitting a truck full blast, like, hands off the handlebars like she's a goner.
Yeah.
There's no, when Seth gets there, like, she's just covered in a blanket, mangled. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, if we've learned anything from these romantic movies of the 90s is, like, if you get laid, you're going to die in these movies. Happened in Ghost. Happens in Titanic. Happens in this movie. First time you have sex, boom. I mean, Ghost, it probably wasn't the first time, to be fair, but... it was the sexiest one.
Yeah. I would have been curious to... like, I would have loved to be in a movie theater watching this movie for the first time and hearing how people reacted when that happened, because I was like...
what the fuck?
Yeah, I was just like, what the fuck is happening? Like, and he just got there. Like, he's got... like, again, I say, he's got no money, no job, no skills, no, like, nothing. Like, she's literally...
she hasn't
trapped.
Had time,
like,
to write him into the will. She...
yeah, like, she's just going to be homeless,
yeah,
basically, like, now.
Yeah. Look what you did, messenger. You've got this bum living with you now. Like, that's all he's got. He's got Nathaniel Messenger.
And it was just like... like, I think it's, like, only so that he can deliver that line at the end when Cassiel comes back to say, like, it was worth that one, like, one sniff of her hair, the one touch, one blah, blah, like...
yeah, yeah.
Just, like, because that, like, sounds really nice.
Yeah, that's
and romantic,
the you
very,
complete me line. Yeah, that's what
that
very,
is. Very very 90s, like, emotive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it actually is just kind of, like, I don't know. I didn't know how to feel about it. When the credits rolled.
Yeah. Yeah, very tragic. She gets got. She dies in his arms. Like, poor Seth. If only he could have even gotten there sooner.
If only he could have used his angel powers to fly counterclockwise to the Earth and turn back time like Superman.
Yeah,
but unfortunately he gave his powers up.
Or, you know, if only that fucking rebel of a doctor just wore a helmet. Come
yeah,
on.
Or that, or just like was like, hey, I'm on the open highway, maybe I shouldn't have my eyes closed and my head back and my arms not on the handlebars.
Yeah. Yeah, that doesn't seem like the right pose. Like, I even on a closed course, you know, you watch car commercials and they always say, you know, do not attempt, done on a closed course. So even on a closed course, I don't know if I'd want to be head back, eyes closed, arms outstretched on a moving bicycle.
Mm-mm.
No, that just doesn't seem like a smart way to ride a bicycle.
No.
A unicycle, yes, but only if you're juggling knives. And there we go. That is City of Angels. Now, Colin on IMDb, it scored 6.7 out of 10, has a Metascore of 54. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 58% on the tomato meter. And this one's going to surprise you, I think. An audience rating of 82%.
Oh, really?
But Colin, those are just numbers. Like a badass doctor hitting a logging truck. Hit us with some reviews.
That 82% actually doesn't surprise me, because looking at reviews, people friggin' love this movie.
Okay, that's fair.
Daniel Flebot says, 5 out of 5 stars. Some viewers argue that this movie is not great, that it is slow, superficial. Those quote-unquote feelings miss the point. This movie can be understood or stated more poignantly, felt by all, wherever one is in time, place, or spiritual sophistication. That makes it great. Any spiritual truth, whether we know it or not, or admit it or not, great line from the flick, must be ascertainable by anyone, anywhere, at any time. I challenge any critic. What in you holds back from humbly letting the truth of this movie fully in your heart? Bathe in one of the best soundtracks of all time.
Yeah.
Let the ache of love overwhelm you like eating a juicy peach while soaking in a hot shower. Even if just for a moment, it's okay. You're free to do so.
Nice. It brings up a valid point, though. The slowness we didn't even really talk about that much. I mean, I touched on it at the very beginning where I said, you know, there are some very sweeping cinematic moments going on in this movie. But yeah, no, so just with the angel stuff, I found the angel stuff actually kind of compelling. The you know, just the debates that were going on amongst them, I kind of wanted a little bit more of that outside of, you know, like the love story that was going on. I mean, what did you think of that slower stuff?
I didn't mind the pacing of the movie. I thought that it was decent. Like, I never felt like it was too slow or anything. I thought things went at like were paced well and went at like a good clip.
Yeah. Okay.
I do agree though. I would have like I feel like the only thing I wanted more of in this movie was more angel conversation, like more conversation about like what it's like to be an angel.
Yeah. That's why the best companion piece to go with City of Angels, I find, is Dogma.
Okay.
That's where you get all the angel discussions. You go watch Dogma, you get your fill of that, and then you watch City of Angels, and you get to see them just hanging out, staring out over buildings.
Sure. All right, my next review is from Jason Boring.
Okay.
It's also 5 out of 5 and says, this is nothing less than an amazing movie. Watch it with your heart, not just with your eyes and mind. The emotional ride from this movie is something no person should miss out on. While this movie is a work of fiction, the love that Seth feels is not, and I hope that every person on Earth has the chance to experience it as well.
Okay. A lot of love. 5 out of 5.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Asha Photos gives the movie 4 out of 5 and says, the first time I ever saw this movie, it haunted me. I was angry at the ending. I kept trying to understand it so much that I bought the soundtrack. The music helped me to feel and work through my own disconnection. Now, whenever I think of how far I have come in my own understanding of life, the origins of that understanding come from my musings and bewilderment over how I felt about the ending of this movie. It still stirs me.
Yeah, like, I mean, this guy, he just... it's all this trauma. He just comes to life and then he has to go through like a grieving process too. And like at the funeral, no one's like, who's this guy standing out in front of all of us?
That's right. That was like my main, that was going to be one of my main points actually. It's like Jordan and Maggie just broke up. Like, and now this guy's here, like, stealing his thunder?
Does anyone even know that Maggie and Jordan have even broke up at this point? Does Jordan even know that Maggie and Jordan have broke up? Or did she just go away to think about it?
Right. But yeah, you don't think, like, I was shocked that there was no scene of, like, of Jordan being like, oh, how did you know her? Like, blah, blah, or like, were you guys friends? Like, blah.
Yeah.
And just, like, because I think Maggie tells him at some point, like, that she was meeting with some guy named Seth.
Yeah.
Like, just for some closure on that aspect.
Yeah. Was he...
yeah, it was super, it's super weird that he's, like, the only recognized, like, he's just standing there, like, front and center at her funeral.
I don't think we even see Jordan or even her friend, Anne. Like, do we even see either of them standing there or... Is it just all umbrellas from over top and he's standing out in the rain by himself?
Yeah, I think that's it.
Who's this guy?
Abir El Gabruni says 5 out of 5 stars. I watched this movie on my way to China, and because it was so long of a flight, I watched it 4 times. It made me believe that a man can love. I loved it, still do.
Made me believe a man can love. What kind of sad existence does that guy have? He's incapable of love. Did a robot write this review?
I don't know. It does sound kind of like AI, but it's pretty old. This last one is that we'll go out on a bad review. It's from Sally Swan. 1 out of 5. I'm 65 and have watched movies forever, even studied them in college. Today, February 2022, this movie has just made me want to stop watching them forever. I found it ridiculous and without substance.
Oh, Sally. I guess she didn't watch that movie when she was 40 then. Right on. Yeah, so City of Angels. I liked it. It wasn't the love fest that I remember it being. Like, I remember it being a lot more romantic. And I don't know whether it's just because I do this show or whether it's because Nicolas Cage has become Nicolas Cage. I know on this viewing, it was kind of like, I'm getting weird vibes from him that I did not get 25 years ago when I first watched this movie. You know, like, it's, I would have been a young kid that would have fallen for free candy or puppies from some man in a van, I think, because even at age 20, I was, you know, still trusting of Nicolas Cage, even though he is a terrifying looking man at some points in this movie. And it makes you wonder how the love story actually happened. But whatever, it happened. I still like it. I still enjoyed City of Angels. And having become a bigger Andre Brower fan over the years, it's nice to see him in this movie where it's like, oh yeah, that guy was in this movie. Yeah. It's still Nick Cage. And as a Maguire choice, it's not a terrible Maguire choice. I hope you enjoyed the fact that I brought City of Angels to you. So, Colin, I'm going to throw it over to you. Yeah. What did you think of City of Angels?
Yeah, I'm going to say I liked it. It's not a movie that I feel like, oh, I'd rush out to go see again, like, right away. But, like, I enjoyed it, and I am glad. It's one of those movies where I think, like, at the end of the day, I'm, like, glad to have watched it, if that makes sense. Like, I just think it adds, like, a little bit some nuance to, like, Nicolas Cage. I totally get what you're, because I don't think I've seen him in a role, weirdly. I've seen, like, lots of his movies at this point, but, like, I haven't seen him in, like, a romantic movie, I don't think.
Yeah.
I've seen more of his, like, action adventure type movies and that kind of stuff.
You have to see Raising Arizona. We have to figure out a way to get Raising Arizona on this show. Cage Fan.
Yeah. Yeah. So I liked it for that. And I definitely thought his character, it's not even his performance, but it's just, I guess, like, maybe it is, but it's like the character is just interesting. I definitely wanted more, like I've said it over and over again, I wanted more context to, like, what it is being an angel in this world, and I wanted a little bit more of that. But overall, like, I thought if somebody just wants to watch, like, a moving love story, like, this is like the perfect, like, if you're with your significant other and you just want, like, some sappy romance movie to watch, I would recommend this movie.
Yeah. Yeah, it's up there with Ghost.
Like, it's got some, you know, good feels. Kind
of. Yeah. I mean, as you did mention at one point, and I totally agree with the idea that the Jordan storyline could have been done without.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe if they had gotten rid of that and focused more on that angel storyline and had it more of a push-pull between Messenger and Cassius or Cassiel or any of the other angels, that kind of thing. That kind of would have been more of a fun movie, is him ultimately choosing love. Whereas this is ultimately she's choosing infidelity.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like...
like, weirdly, the more I think about this movie is, like, you don't learn a lot about anybody. The person you learn... the person who I think you learn the most about is Nathaniel.
Yeah.
Like him, his whole character and as a person is, like... I would say he gets the most, like, substantial, like... Oh, like, you thought he was just, like, some slob, like, catcalling, like, you know, womanizer, and then you learn that he's like a fallen angel and a family man, and like, you know, and his character has some real
ultimately a romantic.
Like, yeah, like his character has some real depth. Whereas like with Seth, I feel like you could have spent more time on like him really wanting to understand what it is to be human, like play more into that, like, oh, I asked people like what their favorite part was and blah blah blah. Like,
he's very curious. Yeah, he shows a lot of curiosity.
Yeah, you could have played more into that with his role, with his conversations with Maggie, aside mm-hmm. from him just being attracted to her.
Yeah.
And then with Maggie, she kind of starts off going through this existential crisis, but I think they also could have, like, dug in more with that about, like, her trying to come to grips with, like, the meaning of life and, mm-hmm. And, like, what is life all about? And what is the point of anything that we do? And, like, I don't know, not to get all religious on people, but, like, just to be, like, you know, like, is there more than just, like, what we do? And then have her, like, you know, when she finds out that he's an angel, like, she doesn't really ask him about, like, being an angel after she finds out. Yeah. She just kind of is, like, you know, let's get horny. Like,
there's not even an I fucking knew it moment, right? Like, yeah.
Yeah, like, so yeah, I think there are just like different choices like that I think could have like lended a little bit more gravity,
yeah,
and a little bit more depth to the story, other than it just being like, oh, an angel and a human fall in love.
Yeah,
like,
how is
that gonna happen?
It's another case of me being able to say, yeah, I like this movie. I love that movie. You know, like, yeah. it's just a little tweak, and, yeah, you take this from a good to a great, but, yeah, I still like City of Angels. Go yeah. Nick Cage. You get that.
Yeah.
And then, like, what does he do for the rest of his life? I mean, obviously, he's gonna, like, he knows she's waiting for him in heaven or whatever.
Well, that was my other question. Is
because,
like,
he fell.
You're a fallen angel. Like, what happens when you go back to, like, what happened? Like,
we've got a dogma situation now.
Happy? Like, what happens to you if you're a fallen angel and mm-hmm. you die as a human? Like, do you get to go back to heaven, or do you throw up and, like, God's pissed?
Yeah, and if you know that there is, like, this afterlife with you definitively know that it's there, then aren't you gonna live a little more recklessly? That seems to be what Nathaniel Messenger is doing.
Yeah, that was that yeah, I think maybe my problem with the ending of the movie, like, because she dies and he's left alone,
yeah, what now?
It just creates so many questions,
yeah,
that are unanswered. So, like, I kind of wish that she had just lived, and it could have just been the type of story where they live. Like, I wish it could have just been a happily ever after story, mm-hmm. basically selfishly, just for my own, you know, peace of mind.
Yeah. But then you wouldn't have gotten some extra skinny dipping in the ocean at the end.
I guess.
Or I guess he went out in pants, but really tickled Cassiel. He found it hilarious. I've never seen Captain Holt laugh.
Yeah.
And there we go. That's City of Angels, and that's our show for the week. Oh boy, if you like that show, just tell the world. Go out there and let people know about the show, help build an audience, or go over to whatever app you listen to your podcast on and give us some stars. Give us 5 stars even. Help drive us up some charts, help us get noticed, or become an executive producer. Throw a couple bucks our way and get a shout-out on the show, just like Joshua Blum of the 13th Hour Podcast.
Be sure to check out our website, iusedtolikethisone.com, where you can find links to all of our podcast episodes and social media pages. Drop us a line at iusedtolikethisone@gmail.com and let us know what movies you used to like. And maybe you'll find us talk about them on the show.
Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band, Carter and the Capitals, anywhere you listen to music. Oh boy, Maguary. It rolls on. Here we go. So,
what's up next?
Well, see, I thought that I'm going to put the 2 out-of-the-box ones on the outside of the month, I think. So, okay. Because we need the 2 most romantic ones in the middle. right? You know, because they're the ones that are surrounding Valentine's Day. So I don't know which way to go, though. Do we want to go Tom, or do we want to go, fuck, what's his name? Billy.
Billy Crystal.
Billy. Tom or Billy? Which way do we want to go?
Let's go Tom. I'm going to say that just because I know I haven't seen it yet, but
okay.
So I'm down with Tom.
So Sleepless in Seattle then. Is what we're doing next week. Oh boy. Yeah.
This is one for me that I feel like I've never seen it, but it's like this is one of those movies that's in like the pantheon of romance movies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it's in the top 10.
This is one of the granddaddies, yeah. I mean, our next two are definitely the granddaddies, but yeah.
It's like the godfather of rom-coms.
The godfather of rom-coms. This is a big one. Sleepless in Seattle. I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully this DVD works for me. Doesn't freeze halfway fucking through it. I'm excited because, you know, I was in Seattle like about a year ago. So it's kind of nice to think that, hey, I've been there. I can't wait to see the sights that I've seen so that I can go, that's not how it is anymore, if it ever was. I like
yeah, hopefully
holes.
They're not, hopefully they're, you know, it wasn't like one of those cases where it's just, they'll show you all the reference shots of Seattle, but everything else is filmed in like Chicago or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the Space Needle has drastically changed since, this movie. So.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway. Well, there we go. So until next week when we watch Sleepless in Seattle, I'm Sean Wells.
I'm Colin Stewart.
And we'll see you then on... Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time on What the fuck is this show called? I used to like this one.
There you go. We got that.
Fell apart at the end because like I had the wrong words coming out of my mouth. What the hell?